Hi, this is Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult, and this is Diablos in Podcastica.
Welcome to Diablos in Podcastica with Toomey and Wadzilla.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Diablos in Podcastica. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by...
Oh, yeah! Oh, last time I would get to say that for a while.
Oh, so Wadzilla. Sad. So sad, man.
Yeah.
Well, back when we started this show, you talked about the people that you wanted to interview, and one of the people that came up was someone from Blue Oyster Cult, and I got the opportunity to interview someone from Blue Oyster Cult, and I was like, you know what? We never did a farewell episode, so let's interview Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult together. And put it out as a farewell episode to the listeners of Diablos and Podcastica.
Oh, hell yeah. It's definitely a dream come true. And, we had a lot of fun with this show. I'm very proud of it. I know you decided to go in some different directions. You've got a great new podcast, your new Pantera podcast. What's it called?
Drag the Waters.
Drag the Waters, man. That's awesome. But the cool thing is, man, we had fun with this, and I know you put a lot of hard work into it. It's fun, but you know, we're still friends, and I know, you know, no matter what you do, I'll probably guest, you know, some week when you're really hard up, you know, and everybody else, you know, canceled on you.
When the fourth bass player of Clawfinger cancels on me, you'll jump
in.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, that shit happens, you know. and I'll be there. And, you know, if I do decide to do something else in the future, I know, you know, you'll be involved at some point. And this was really, really a dream come true because we already decided to end the show, but you knew how much, you know, this meant to me. And I can't thank you enough, not only for being a great co-host for all these episodes, but for being a good friend and, you know, doing this after the fact, man, that meant so much to me and says a lot about who you are. So thank you.
Yeah. I think I just realized over the time, I know my lane and it is not music critique. It's music interviews. And so, and also I don't play well with others. So, I think you're my third co-host I've had. And you know, it's just like, I'm so used to doing this by myself on my own time. You know, being able to just, you know, carve out a chunk of time here and there, and you know, your and my schedule never really lined up, and so it just made sense to just kind of move on. But I obviously wanted to let everyone know that you know I don't leave Ian in any kind of ill will, and you know, it just wasn't coming together. It was always like, you know, I got this, there's a hurricane, there's a coronavirus, there's a, you know, a typhoon, and you know, on call, and it was just not meant to be at the time.
Yeah, just say it. It's because I'm Black Irish. You know? go ahead. Let it out.
But no, it was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, just the reaction to the show and stuff, it was a lot of fun to do together.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And one thing that was fun to do was this interview with Buck Dharma, because I am such a surface-level Blue Oyster Cult fan. Like, I know the hits, and that's about it. But, you know, they're obviously... a fan favorite for a lot of people and, you know, huge, I guess, you know, a cult favorite to a lot of people, no pun intended. And it was great. You know, I was hitting him with my surface level questions. You were deep diving into song trilogies and people passing away. And, you know, you did this on the 15th album, but not the 18th album. And I was just sitting, but I had the biggest smile on my face, doing this interview and hearing you kind of geek out on Buck Dharma. It was great.
Oh yeah, I mean, I know the guy's shoe size, you know big fan, yeah, big yeah. fan, and it was just one of those things, man. It just, you know, to say I was probably a little nervous, definitely more nervous than anybody else I interviewed, but Buck was such an awesome guy to talk to, and it just flowed really well. And you know, I know you told me ahead of time that, you know, hey, you know. This is a big time, kid. You know, we might only get 20 minutes, you know, 20 minutes would be lucky. You know, I think we got almost a half hour. Yeah. And quite frankly, I think he would have stayed on the phone for more. But out of respect, you know, to the guy, I know he's doing a lot of interviews. You know, we came in there. We definitely, you know, I think fans of Blue Oyster Cult will be happy with this interview, and I'm definitely happy and proud of this. And again, can't think of a better way for this show to ride into the sunset than with this episode.
I think we left off at the right time, because had you gotten any more time with Buck Dharma, you would have started crying, you know, started telling him how much you loved him. You know, it was funny towards the end of this interview, and listeners will find it funny too, but you geek out on him, man. You're like, and then I saw you guys in Florida, and then I saw you guys here. And you just kind of fanboyed out on him, man. But I loved it. And I definitely left it in the interview.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah, man. No shame in my game, man. This is my band.
But I feel like you've been doing more podcasts since you got off of Diablos than you have, you know, while you were on it. You know, you've been on Decibel Geek a couple times, and you've done some Rock and Metal Combat episodes and stuff.
Yeah. You know, Decibel Geek, you know, they feel sorry for me, you know, every once in a while, and let me come on their show.
Throw you a bone.
Yeah, I've been getting back to doing the fan paid episodes for all the people who paid for, you know, their donations to Rock and Pod, because I think that's very important. You know, people who donated money to that, I'm going to honor all those. And so I've been knocking them out. But in all honesty, I don't know where my future lies with podcasting. You know, as well as anybody, man, it takes time, and you got to have the passion, and it's about finding the right people. And I've been very lucky, you know, to work with you, to work with Ralph Vieira in the past, you know. So I've worked with some real pros. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see where my passion is at the end of the fan episodes. And I might ride off into the sunset and maybe just make guest appearances. Or maybe I'll finally get Rock Cocks off the ground. I don't know. Who knows? So, you know, no matter what, if that is the end, I mean, fuck, you know, doing this show and you know, Rock and Metal Combat podcast, that's a pretty damn good resume, you know, pretty good legacy. And I'm so glad that you're part of my podcasting history. And man, we had so much fun. All the episodes, man, we've laughed and we're able to maintain a friendship, you know, and that says something in podcasting.
Right.
So, I'm just really happy, and I want to thank all the listeners who jumped on board and, you know, supported the show and shared it a lot, and means a lot. So I hope everybody enjoys this as our farewell. And again, thank you for everything, brother. I know we'll do this again in some fashion.
Absolutely. And I hope you do not give up on podcasting. I hope somebody comes along that wants to do a show with you, because I will listen to anything you do. Anytime you've been popping up on these other shows, I always make sure to check it out. So, you know, I definitely want you to continue in this world. So hopefully, you know, maybe you show a little leg, and maybe somebody will pick you up.
Yeah, well, maybe I got to go away for a while, you know, build up, you know, I can charge more, you know, it's more of an event.
Well, man, what Blue Oyster Cult song do you want us to play to go into the interview?
Let's see. I would love to do The Alchemist. I think that's one that, you know, hardcore Blue Oyster Cult fans will be like, yeah, that's Blue Oyster Cult. Cause this album, you know, when we get into it, it's got some modern sounds, some different sounds. I found the album definitely to be a grower, but here's a little something that, you know, no matter what era of the band you're into, this is going to sound like BOC to you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, here's our interview with Buck Dharma. Ian, thank you so much for doing a show with me for almost a year, through almost all of COVID. We did a show.
Yeah, this is the COVID podcast. The COVID's all going to go away, and so did the show. So glad you were down with the sickness for a while.
All right, guys, and make sure to check out the latest from Blue Oyster Cult. The Symbol Remains out now, and this is The Alchemist. And then we will talk to Buck Dharma. We'll check out some new stuff. And I guess we won't be talking to you soon. but thanks again for checking it out.
I've walked a path of darkness just to open up my mind. I've learned of hidden secrets scattered through the depths of time. And at my father's side, I witness things I can't describe. They must be evil!
Yeah.
right. Well, guys, let's welcome a legend to the podcast. We've got Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult. Buck, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm still living, so that would make me a living legend.
Very, very cool, man. Well, we're on to talk about your new album, man. It's a long time coming. And I guess just first off, man, why take so long between albums here?
I think for years we didn't care about recording just because it seemed like the effort wasn't rewarded financially or even recognition-wise.
Right.
So we were doing real well as a touring band, and we were content to do that. And then over the intervening period, the current lineup stabilized, and the band just got really good and really started to have its own identity, I think. And it got to the point where it would just be a mistake and a pity not to record it. So we, around 2015, people were just bugging us for new material anyway. So we started looking for a deal that would work for us. And our management found Frontiers, and it took about a year to negotiate the deal. And because we had a lot of those concert videos and DVDs, and we owned the rights to the Heaven Forbid and Curse of the Hidden Mirror records outside of the U.S. We don't control it in the U.S. So, but anyway, we made a package deal, and the centerpiece, of course, was a new record. So we wrote it mostly in 2019. Some of the songs are a little older, and we finished it under the lockdown this year, and here it is.
Now, the one thing I like about it is the, you know, it's very modern, but it also touches, you know, you have a lot of staples that are Blue Oyster Cult staples in there, you know, with vocal harmonies or guitar lines. And, you know, how hard is that for you to kind of balance that with trying to sound, you know, something new, but also, you know, let the classic fans also have something there too?
We almost can't help ourselves as far as sounding like Blue Oyster Cult,
yeah,
given Eric's voice and my voice, and also the way we play. And also, and even with the current lineup of Richie Castellano and Jules Rodino and Danny Miranda, we play the classic repertoire. We all understand what Blue Oyster Cult is, in other words. And yes, the production, I think, reflects the capabilities and the technology of today. But again, I think we can't help ourselves but sound like Blue Oyster Cult. So that's what we do.
Yeah, the symbol remains is great. Ian, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought it was great, too, to add Richie on vocals, because it really takes it back to the older days where you had, you know, so many different people singing. You had your Buck songs, your Eric songs, and the brother songs. Was it really easy to let Richie sing these songs, or did it feel weird being just you and Eric for so long?
No, Richie sang some of the Joe Bouchard songs live anyway, and Richie's such a talented guy. It would just be a shame not to take advantage of him. And his writing and arranging contributions on this record are very important.
Yeah, I would agree. And for, you know, longtime fans, even that he would write something like, you know, the Saint Celia sequel. I mean, that means a lot to the hardcore fans and shows he respects the history of the band, and I really enjoy that about the new record.
Yeah, he you know, we all got that lyric from Richard, and Richie picked it up and ran with it. And when he came into the rehearsal with what he'd written, we were floored. So we said, yeah, Rich, let's go with this.
Now, how was this one recorded? Was this, you know, files sent over the computer? Or was this, you know, because a lot's changed in the last 20 years since the last time you guys released an actual studio album. So, I mean, how did you guys go about doing this one?
Yeah, we're comfortable working remotely, and we had to once the lockdown happened. But we were fortunate that we rehearsed the material last summer around our tour dates. And but we purposely blocked out weekdays to do rehearsals. And I live in Maryland, and most of the band is around New York, so I would have to go up to New York and stay at a hotel for a few days during the rehearsal sessions. And we did weeks and weeks of rehearsal. And then we did the basic tracks at a studio in Dobbs Ferry, New York, just north of New York City. And we did three sessions, one in September, one in October, and one in December. So we got all the basic tracks down before the COVID virus hit, which was lucky for us. And when the finishing the overdubs, finishing the finished vocals and whatever guitars we wanted to add to the basic track guitars, we did during the lockdown. I've got a home studio where I live, and Richie has one in Staten Island, and Danny Miranda has one in his house, and Jules has one. So we were able to embellish the basic tracks that way, and we collaborated with software like Zoom to talk to each other and to basically look over each other's shoulders. We couldn't play together in real time, but we could produce each other, and that's the way we did it.
Sounds so science fiction. You know, if you go back to the formation of Blue Oyster Cult, and you know, talk about, you know, so many years later, you're going to be recording over computers and, you know, looking all Star Trek and stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, even in the day when after we did the basic tracks, usually the people that were doing the overdubs would be in the studio, and not everybody in the band would be there at the same time. But I think, you know, COVID aside, that more people are going to work this way just because you can. You can work. It doesn't matter where you live. You could collaborate with people across the world.
Yeah. This has just been like a really good time for Blue Oyster Cult fans, because you've put out so much stuff lately with the, you know, the new studio album and the live albums. I mean, you got the live version of Agents of Fortune, the live recording of the first album, the Cleveland show from 2014. Is there any chance of getting an audio or video recording of the anniversary concert you did where the original lineup got to back together, you know, in Alan's last performance? Because I've got a bootleg of that, but I would love something official.
Yeah, I don't know who actually recorded that in an official capacity. I don't know if we did or not. I guess somebody must have it. But I would say if it exists, yeah, there's a possibility it would come out. I don't see why we wouldn't want to do that.
And how was that night for you? Was it weird playing with everybody back again? Was it natural? You got some great memories of that show?
Yeah, no, it wasn't weird at all, but it was just a little rushed logistically. You know, I wish we'd had a little more time to prepare for that. I mean, that day was hectic otherwise, but the music was the least of the hectic. It was good time.
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed, you know, last couple tours you've had Albert come out and play with you in different capacities. And I thought that was really neat. And I really get why you recorded with this particular lineup, because it does feel, you know, solidified. And this is BOC now. But yeah. I know in the last three records, you know, you've used like John Shirley lyrically a lot. And unfortunately, Sandy Pearlman's no longer around. Was there ever a point where you thought maybe at least from a songwriting standpoint to bring in the brothers at all? Was that ever discussed?
Not officially, you know, we invited Albert to do overdubs, and I've collaborated with Albert on this Michael Moorcock project that he got me into, and there's two records there that I've done stuff on, and I'm doing stuff for the third. And I think Albert is wants to get us to do his next reimagine us project, and I certainly would be open to doing that. So you'll see more collaborations with Albert anyway, and you know, we haven't talked to Joe about it, but I wouldn't rule out anything.
Oh, that would be fantastic. But you got a real solid lineup now, and I like seeing Danny come back. I think every time I've seen you, he's been playing bass and just does an incredible job. And I do like how you have Richie can handle, you know, the different songs and stuff. So you've really got a good lineup, and I think it shows in the new record.
Yeah, we certainly put our hearts and souls into the record, and the reception so far has been phenomenal, and that's very gratifying to me.
I do want to take it off track a second. A frequent guest of this show is Frank Novinick of Hatebreed. And he's actually been you guys have brought him up on stage a couple of times over the years. And yeah. of all bands, you don't picture Hatebreed and Blue Oyster Cult kind of crossing over. So where did the relationship with Frank start, and how do your fans react to that when you say a guy from a band called Hatebreed's coming out on stage?
Well, you know, Frank introduced himself to us years ago, and we've become pretty good friends over the years. And of course, you know, we're flattered that to get any kind of appreciation or recognition. I think most bands are, most artists are, and it's great to know him. And we look forward to seeing him whenever our paths cross. We used to, when we get down to Florida, he usually turns up if he's not on the road himself. And we see him overseas sometimes. Usually some of these big festivals is where we'll both be on the same bill. So yeah, Frank's a great guy, very talented guy. And you know, I've seen him play live, and we're not all that far off as far as music, but like, again, it's great to know him and to be his friend.
I would love to see the crowd from your angle when you guys bring him up on stage. Probably a lot of puzzled looks.
Well, actually, in the places where that happens, it's not that strange, since they're getting a diet of music that's closer to his music than ours most of the time. You know, when we play these big metal festivals, you know, we're probably the tamest act that they hear.
Go ahead, Ian.
You don't have like an outrage, you know, with weird wants and desires that they have to fulfill.
No, I think our fans are pretty open. I mean, the boys are called stylistically is pretty broad, so you know, there's probably less expectation of normality or predictability from BOC than most artists.
Well, one thing that's so awesome about Blue Oyster Cult shows is how you change the set list up. You know, you're always going to get the classics that the standard people might know. But every time I've seen you, you've thrown out, you know, that deep cut that really satisfies the audience. And who usually goes about deciding the set list? Everybody, or do you and Eric pretty much handle that?
Yeah, Eric generally handles the set list, you know, based on what he wants to sing and what he wants to do. And he's very mindful of mixing it up both for the band and the listener. You know, we have historic set lists from the last time we played a given market, and he'll take a look at that and throw up something new. We have to keep it interesting for ourselves primarily, you know, above all else, because you know, we're doing it for as long as we enjoy it. So that's, we have to please ourselves.
Right. And you did, you know, had success with the Agents of Fortune shows and playing the first album in its entirety. Is there any other ones that you thought of that, you know, you'd like to do an evening of, you know, say Specters or, you know, Secret Treaties or something like that?
Maybe, but if we did like a protracted tour somewhere, we could probably do something like that. The kind of shows that we generally do, though, is, you know, we fly from different cities and play these one-off tours, you know, so one-off shows. So that's a little harder to do the kind of thing you're talking about. But again, nothing is off the table, as they say.
Yeah, and I've seen you on some very interesting shows too. I mean, I've seen just a solo BOC show. I saw you with Molly Hatchet, one show with Christopher Cross and Foghat, and I saw you with Joe Walsh. And just, I think it's great. You can pretty much play with anybody. I remember getting so mad. You were playing a show in Florida with Molly Hatchet, and they went way over the time they were supposed to when you were the last band in the show at the end of the time. And I just wanted to pull the plug because I'm like, asshole, I'm going to miss Harvester of Eyes now because you're doing a 20-minute Gator Country.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, but I would love to see, you know, any show. You always make it interesting for the fans, and I think that's great.
Well, thanks for that. And yes, you know, we expect bands to stick to the schedule, and sometimes they don't, and that's unfortunate. But anyway, we otherwise we dig Molly Hatchet, and especially especially the version that was out for the last eight years or so.
Now, Buck,
yeah, they were good, but I was there for you.
Now, Buck, being a kid of the 90s, I grew up watching Dazed and Confused and a movie called The Stoned Age. And I just want to kind of get your thoughts and memories of when that movie came out and being associated with that movie so much.
Yeah, that was fun to do. We did that little cameo in it, and we provided them with some BOC lore and visual cues and memorabilia. But kind of a silly story, but I don't know, it was fun. What can I say? You know, we haven't done too much. There's a few things where BOC gets mentioned in movies, and that's one of them. So it was good.
So is Don't Fear a Reaper a pussy song?
to a degree, yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I love it. And speaking of movies, do you feel like every time they reboot the Godzilla series that your bank account's about to get a few bucks in it?
You know, we got dissed as far as being in the soundtrack of all these Godzilla movies over the years, but finally we did, and it was due to the score guy who wrote the score that happened.
Another movie that I would love to see get a proper release, and from my understanding, it has a lot to do with rights, but the concert film Black and Blue. I mean, I bought bootlegs of that at record conventions back in the 90s, but that's something I've always heard rumors that it's going to get released and then it doesn't. Is there any updates on the status of that?
I think for whatever reason, the Black Sabbath camp, as controlled by Sharon Osbourne, has put the kibosh on that. So, I can't speak authoritatively to that, but that's what I understand.
I could see that because it's the Ronnie era. And trying to bury that. But was that, I know that you were both, Sandy Perlman was managing you both at the time. You were both working with Martin Birch as a producer. Exactly. Was that a cool tour, or was it kind of weird because of conflicting things? Do you have fond memories of that?
Yeah, it was a great experience. It was a great bill for the music. The bad part was that I don't think Black Sabbath was very happy with Sandy Perlman's management at the time. And also the fact that they had to alternate headlining with Blue Oyster Cult. They thought they were bigger than Blue Oyster Cult. They may have been, but we were also pretty big at that time. So I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say in all, it was a great time to work with them. Yeah.
Awesome.
Speaking of the classic tours, man, we've got a ton of Kiss fans that listen to this show. Do you have any good Kiss memories from touring with Kiss?
Yeah, well, I remember when Kiss first showed up, they opened shows for us for a couple of times before they got huge. And I just remember they came, you know, we had like a little box truck, and they show up with a semi and all these stage props. And when they put on the costumes and those big stacked heel boots, you know, they were like huge. You know, we're little guys, and they're like twice as big as us. So we're like hobbits compared to the, you know, Gene and Paul. So that was funny. And of course, the spectacle of that is ridiculous anyway. You know, the Kiss, the show initially was just something that had never been seen before.
I was just going to say another legendary project that you're always going to be associated with is the animated film Heavy Metal. Yeah. And I heard at one point, you know, the soundtrack was fully going to be BOC, and even songs that ended up on Fire of Unknown Origin, you know, were based around that. How late in the game did you find out that it wasn't going to be that way?
I think we always knew, but on the other hand, we all wrote songs that, you know, may or may not have been appropriate for the movie, you know, and the ones that they didn't pick wound up on BOC records. So but we always knew that we were just going to have one song in the movie.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. But great, great track. And I love, I mean, that Fire of Unknown Origin is just such an incredible album. And yeah, I can see a lot of those being in there, but, you know, veterans works perfectly. And what an epic scene in the movie.
Yeah. While I'm thinking of it, I just want to give thanks to Bear McCreary, who's the composer of the Godzilla version that was in the movie. He got that version together and produced it, and hat tip to Bear, because he made it happen, and finally Godzilla the song got used in a movie.
Yeah, which should have been done all along.
And I like that version, by the way. I like the my grandson George, he actually prefers Bear's version to our version, which is okay. He calls it the Blue Godzilla. He's 3 years old, so he gets
that. Well, do you have any plans? Have you, I should say, made any plans for future concerts at all? Like planning ahead, or are you just holding back?
We work when we can. We've done three concerts under the post lockdown, and one was a drive-in show, and one was outdoors at a winery near Pittsburgh, and we've got a date indoors in December, which I think is a private affair that's going to be socially distanced or whatever. You know, they do what they have to around the requirements of the localities. But yeah, we're not afraid to work, and we'll work as much as we can. And I hope they get over the hump of the COVID, because it's just a major annoyance in the whole damn world.
Well, releasing an album during coronavirus probably isn't too bad, because if you go out and perform these songs live, you know, that's typically when someone goes, all right, going to grab a beer. You know, it's hard to keep, you know, everybody wants to hear the hits. It's hard to keep their attention through new songs.
Right. I mean, that's an aspect of classic bands making new material. You can't really get it played on the radio since the classic rock stations are basically, you know, selling nostalgia. I mean, playing the old songs, you know, the familiar songs. But the fans have been really receptive to this new stuff. So we'll probably do four or five at least of the new record when we go back out. And the longer we can play, the more we can play of it.
And I would love to, you know, something like The Alchemist, or I would really like to hear Florida Man live. I really love that track. And when I saw the title, I'm just picturing it, and it was exactly what I pictured. And I love that track.
Yeah. And
it's one of those, it's kind of un-BOC, but wait, it's so BOC. But I thought you did a fantastic job on that. And I could really see it sounds, it's modern. It has a live feel to it. So I could see a lot of these songs translating well.
Yeah. One thing we did do on this record was keep a lot of the performances that we did when we cut the drum tracks. And we didn't overdub everything and replace everything. A lot of the live performance that we did, we kept. So, yeah, that's true. And but, you know, The Alchemist is such a great stylistic. I mean, it's just right in that heavy pocket. You know, you almost know what to expect, you know, even as you don't know what to expect.
Oh, yeah. I could hear that coming off of any of the black and white period era albums. And I mean, it just that, you know, that sound of the, like, here's classic BOC in 2020. And I was so happy. And plus, you have all these videos. And I believe Richie's behind doing a lot of that. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep, we got together to do the green screen part of the videos where you see us actually playing instruments, and then everything else was done in a computer. And Richie and Steve Shank are the ones that really put the hours in to do that, and gave Richie yet another arrow in his quiver of talent.
Well, I think he's done a great job, and I can't believe. I mean, what I think there's four already.
Yes,
for this album.
Yeah, we did enough performances for four songs, and then they've all been made into videos. I imagine we're going to do more, because without being able to play live, it's really the only way you're going to get to see us do stuff. So we'll probably make more videos.
Well, I think it's a great way to get promotion, because every time you put it up, you see it on Blabbermouth, you see it on YouTube, and it really gets the word out there, you know, that you've got a new album out, and there's been a really good response. So I think probably the biggest response I've seen to a BOC album since the 80s, really, because it's all over the internet.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the people promoting it are doing a great job. The Frontiers people are doing a great job, and the press and the people that are interviewing us are doing a great job. So yeah,
he's talking about us, Ian.
Oh, yeah.
What about you guys? Yeah.
I tell you what, this I was raised on BOC. My father. Actually, he discovered you guys on the first album and talked to a booking guy and had you guys booked at a show in Kankakee, Illinois on your first big tour. So I've grown up with you. BOC was something we always shared and listened to together. My son, it took me a while. And then when Metallica covered Astronomy, he's like, yeah, that BOC band, you like that? I'm like, yeah, now you get it. You know, so it's like, three generations of us. And even I know I was introduced to you as Ian, but everybody else knows me as Wadzilla. I got my nickname at my first ill-fated Blue Oyster Cult show in Orlando when I got on stage with you guys and then was asked to leave. But I've been Wadzilla ever since. And this is just a complete honor to talk to you, Buck. And I'm so excited.
Great, great, Ian. That's a great story.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know I was probably, you know, voiding out a restraining order you guys have against the Wadzilla here. You're like, oh, that's you're probably the Florida man himself, yeah. Ian.
Yeah.
I wondered about that.
Well, if you got frog marched off the stage, I missed it. So,
It was my first show, and I was a little overzealous, and I was surrounded by overzealous people, and they threw me on stage, and I came up, I hugged you, I hugged Eric, then I saw security, and I jumped off the stage before they got me.
You're like a little
and
girl.
They kindly asked me to leave.
Well, that's okay. It probably looked great for the crowd.
There you go.
Yeah. But, you know, I've got to see you other times since then. I always wear a disguise just in case you remember how I look. And so far it's worked out.
Well, good. Good. And thanks for being a fan. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. And I'm in the New Orleans area now. I saw you the last time you were here at Gretna Fest. That's been some years back now. And I hope someday you get back here because I got to see BOC a fifth time and then some.
Yep. Yeah, we're overdue to go back to New Orleans area.
Yeah, huh. It would be great.
All right,
and
Ian.
I just want to thank you so much for doing this. Yeah. No.
Put your panties back on,
now.
Ian.
You're fucking it up, Josh.
Well, Buck, man, thank you so much for taking the time today. And let's leave the interview off with a track off of the latest album. And which track would you like us to play off of The Symbol Remains?
Yeah, Play That Was Me. That's the opening track, and it gives you a good sense of what's to come.
You feel
Hi, this is Buck Dharma, and me and my best friend Wadzilla are rocking.